Hello, and welcome to Women Speak. My name is Danielle, and on today's episode, I speak with Lucia Andruskova about healthcare in the justice system. A recent nurse at the Portland County Jail, we discuss her experiences downtown and her thoughts on current healthcare disparities. If you have any questions about today's episode or would like to be featured on Women Speak, feel free to contact me on Facebook at Women Speak PDX. Thank you, and I hope you enjoy. All right, well, welcome, Lucia.
Hello.
Hello. First off, what inspired you to go into social work? I know you were doing that in Atlanta before you moved here in Portland, and a little bit while you were first here in Portland.
Yeah, so I've always been very interested with psychology ever since I was pretty much younger. I think that what happened is I kind of became a little radicalized through feminism and just some of the things that were going on in Portland at the time. And I really realized that a lot of oppression kind of seemed to intersect it with mental health issues. You know, historically, women have been seen as insane for stepping against norms. Mental health has kind of been used as like a form of almost oppression. You know what I mean? People were literally tortured, you know, in hospitals. And then they were kind of released onto the street and then still kind of ignored, people that really did struggle with mental illnesses. So I just thought that was really awful. And I wanted to be a catalyst in some way, or an advocate at least. So that's what got me into the whole thing.
Yeah.
I also thought that it was really weird, just the concept of being normal always bothered me, and I know that that's something that you kind of need diagnostically, you know what I mean? Am I too close or too far? So I didn't like that you know, people had to be categorized that way, especially since I was like a teenager and I was like trying to find my own individuality and, you know, wanted to be unique and thought everyone should, you know, be that way, but...
Yeah, definitely. So then after social work, you went on to work for the county jail for the past year and a half. Tell me how you found your way there.
Well, I did social work in Atlanta for quite a few years. I moved there for 5 years. And at that time, doing that type of work, it was kind of disheartening just because there's such a lack of resources that I wish that we could, you know, provide people better, because it felt like a dead end sometimes when you are trying to help someone. And whether they even want to engage or not, sometimes there's nowhere for them to really go just by the situation, whatever their situation is. And so one thing that fascinated me was how mental health and physical health are taken separately, but when in fact they're actually very similar. One influences the other very much, you know. A lot of stress can affect your, down to your physical health. You can develop ulcers in your stomach, and vice versa. Some chronic illnesses can create some definite mental illnesses as well, depression and anxiety as well. So I thought that the two shouldn't be separate, and I felt like I needed to understand physical health and well-being better to make a more holistic type of approach.
So would you say that social work definitely prepared you for the jail system and healthcare?
So that was like a really natural progression.
I know, it's so hot in here.
Realizing
summertime podcast, man. My last one, it was like so hot as well. I don't know what's going on.
I think also, you know,
a little wine, yeah, you know, wine. It's
helps
flushing us.
So social work really prepared me for that, the similar type of clientele. Unfortunately, you know, mental illness is overrepresented in the jail system. So it was like a very normal transition for me, because what we treated a lot of was mental illness or addiction, which, in my opinion, kind of goes hand in hand with mental illness in some ways as well. So it made sense. I wasn't scared. You know, I think a lot of people are like, when I tell them, they're like, oh my God, you worked in the jail. That's crazy.
Yeah, and all of like the crazy people that you meet. I mean, that was like my first like thought that crossed my mind when I found out where you worked was like, oh my God, like, do you fear for your safety on a daily basis? Like, what's going on in there?
It seems intimidating, but I mean, from my other friends who are nurses, they are you know, I think I've heard more stories of nurses being attacked in the hospital setting rather than in the jail. Because in the jail, you're always with someone, you know? First of all. Second of all, you know, you're the only advocate that a lot of these people have that are in jail. And so they don't usually want to attack you. Sometimes, I mean, there's people that are, you know, high on drugs or meth or whatever. And they can be kind of scary. I've definitely been cussed out a lot, you know? But yeah, it's not as intimidating as you would think. I think mostly because I would guesstimate something like, I don't know, 85-90% of the people that I saw weren't really bad people or crazy or sociopathic the way you might imagine.
Right.
You know, our system is not really set up in a very great way. And so, like I said, overrepresented mental illness. People that just were in a bad place at the wrong time. People who had prior convictions that were maybe stupid, but then they didn't have the resources to go to court on time or didn't have it together enough. And so now they had warrants and they were just constantly circulating the system.
And in and out of the system.
Constantly in and out. So that concept of the revolving door, it's like, definitely saw that.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So because prisoners are, or people that visit the jail are reentering society with their illnesses, it does somehow affect the community while, you know, they're let back in or released. Do you believe in some form of appropriate, like, intervention?
Yeah, I mean, I think if the goal of the justice system is to provide rehabilitation, which is what, you know, that's what we're trying to do, supposedly. I don't think we're doing a really great job with that. I don't think that people are really rehabilitated. If anything, they're, and, you know, I hate to say it, but I really do feel like people learn to be better criminals from being in jail. And so,
right.
And not only that, but you have to look at how well they can then transition their life in the community setting.
So well, they become, options. Yeah, they become institutionalized, and without services and group homes, would you say that, you know, to essentially de-institutionalize them, they're just going to keep up that cyclical process of going back into the system?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're talking kind of big concepts because I really think that in order to better this, we would have to completely restructure how we think of the justice system and how we think of punishment or anything like that. I think the idea of punishment in itself is inherently not healing, and it's not really a good way to rehabilitate. But it's the only concept we've got in this society. I think there's other examples in other places where they've kind of taken a more, you know, kind of liberal approach to rehabilitation. I think it's shown to work a lot better. I will say, you know, I do really believe that there is a percentage of people that kind of are just bad seeds. They're assholes. They do things that are fucked up. I won't say there's no hope for them, but I think that, you know, I'm not going to say, like, oh, they'll be a great person if only we just hug them more or something like that. But I will say that, like, most of the people really don't belong in that type of setting, and it's not helping them, you know, isolating them. A lot of them too are sick and or have PTSD or have gone through extreme trauma, and putting them in a situation where they're getting strip searched or isolated in a cell, it's not therapeutic, you know.
Right.
So
Well, and the jail system itself is set up to confine and punish, which is the opposite mission of the medical care system. So, you know, would you say that's probably one of the biggest reasons there's so much debate revolving around health care provided for prisoners or those in the system?
I think so, but I think the interesting concept of your question is that, you know, what the two have separate don't have in common, in theory at least, but what they do have in common, unfortunately, is profit. And when you think about that, in a sense, you both can be pretty profitable, especially if you've got a revolving door. And in a sense, healthcare can be like that too. You're kind of keeping people in this rut and coming back to the same problems, you know what I mean? And they're needing this treatment that's not really helping them in the end either, depending on the illness, of course, but, you know, especially with mental health. Like, there's so much we don't know, and there's so much variation on how you will respond to certain drugs, and drug therapy is so up in the air that, I mean, so anyways, so that's one side of it, but yes, punishment on the justice system side, the police side, and then there's our side, which is supposed to be, like, the opposite. And it's true. I mean, there's been lots of times where I've had to, like, advocate for clients because I didn't think they were going to be safe, or I didn't think that we could take care of them in the jail system. And the police side of that did not like that. They right, bring people right. to jail to whatever for... That's their job, but it's my job to be like, can we take care of them while they're here? And a lot of them, we couldn't take care of them. And they would really get mad if right. you didn't accept them.
Yeah. And so does the jail downtown, do they charge for medical care?
So it depends on what it is. So there's a lot of chronic illnesses that come through the door when we're talking about just the medical, not the mental health side of things. But even the mental health side, all medications are free. And any treatments, like if they went to see the doctor within the jail, is going to be free. But anything outside of the jail, like if they go to the ER, that also is going to be coming from the county. But outside appointments that are like surgery or something like that, they'll just pay for that the way they would with other surgeries.
Right.
But I will say that the county, Multnomah County, is set up in a way where the county pays for all of this, whereas other counties, they're privatized. So
right.
I think they do have to pay.
Right.
In a different way.
Well, I feel like the courts have generally allowed prisons to attempt to recoup some of the costs of treating inmates by charging them for their care. So, you know, rather than the walk-in facility, they're required to make a payment. Do you feel like that's another way of just, like, kicking them while they're down, so to speak?
Well, it's hard because I think that a lot of people, because there's so much addiction problems within the jail, I think that a lot of people also misuse the medical system in hopes to get something that can either give them status within the jail culture, or like it can, they might need a drug, they might want, you know, they haven't had their whatever that they want, and so they're hoping you'll give them something to help them sleep, something to take the edge off, if you will. But so you have to, but yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that we're trying to kick them while they're down, because we certainly, I never saw us really ignoring legitimate medical concerns, but there was, one thing I really disagreed with was the withdrawal protocols there.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so like a lot of people, for example, would be withdrawn. The most important withdrawal that you want to be really careful about is from benzos and from alcohol. Reason being is those are both lethal, potentially. If they're withdrawing, they could die, you know?
Right.
But opiates, usually people don't die from that. Usually they might be vomiting or diarrhea that might cause dehydration. And so you have to be careful about that. But, like, anyway, so people would come in, they were on legitimate programs, like methadone or Suboxone, whatever. And we did not provide them with that. And so we made them withdraw, even if they were on a good path of trying to get out of their addiction. And so I didn't really like that because it's painful and traumatizing.
Right. Yeah.
You've got someone who's struggling with whatever that already led them to this addiction, which is so they're a person that already has poor coping skills, if you will, because right. They're coping with drugs maybe. And then you take away that coping mechanism and you put them in a super stressful situation of being incarcerated and dealing with the repercussions of that, and then you're telling them too bad.
Yeah. You know?
That's really scary for a lot of these people. Understandably so, it would be for me too. So, I don't know, I think that's problematic.
Yeah. Well, in July of this year, the American Civil Liberties Union and other advocates allege that the U.S. District Court in Nashville, the officials were knowingly denying inmates for their care for hepatitis C. It alleges that the department is denying care because the available medication is too expensive. Do you have any knowledge on that topic?
Well, I don't really...
As far as the costs go, or...
I do think that the only treatments that are... Well, there is no treatment for Hep C. It's a chronic illness that... So really, the only thing that you're ever going to be treating is, like, symptoms that come from having Hep C, and I think that that's not really something that they wouldn't, like, they would do labs on these people to make sure that, you know, their labs are coming back okay, and that their liver functions okay, but the medication that they do have for Hep C is a very expensive one, and I think that the reasoning behind not giving it out to everyone is such a large population of people have Hep C. Jail is a place that people usually spend only up to a year in, and so if you've got someone coming off the street who's got Hep C mm-hmm. and they've never had that treatment before,
yeah.
why give it to them for 3 months when they're just going to leave again and then not have, you know what I mean? Like yeah. some medications you need to take consistently. And since this is a chronic illness, if your labs are okay, then it's not really worth it to be starting that type of therapy.
Right. And what about gender-specific healthcare needs? You know, women represent 9% of the incarcerated, and many women, you know, state that reproductive healthcare is painful and avoid general checkups.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have experience with women avoiding, you know, any kind of checkups?
I think that the best example that comes to my mind is probably OB care, pregnant women.
Right.
And so that happens a lot. And I mean, it's just hard to provide, like, there wasn't anyone that would do, like, regular pap smears or anything like that, but we did have an OB doctor at one of the jails that we would send all of the pregnant women to that, and we had a plan mm-hmm. for their entire pregnancy of kind of like how to treat that. And I think it's gotten a lot better because there was a big scare in the last couple of years where this woman gave birth in jail. And
oh, wow.
Yeah,
that's
like
crazy.
One of the like officers like caught the baby like after,
oh my
like,
gosh.
Yeah, it was like crazy.
Like out of a movie.
Yeah, like in a movie scene, exactly. So I think that scared a lot of people that work there. It's just so many risks involved with that, right? So now I think this plan is even more strict, and pretty much if anything goes even a little bit wrong, like, the woman just goes immediately to the hospital. But
right. Well, because in 2013 there was a case in California that an advocacy group, Justice Now, and the Center for Investigative Reporting revealed that hundreds of women were sterilized and had been pressured into signing consent forms. And others reported that the doctor recommended a hysterectomy without fully explaining the consequences. Like, that's such a crazy, extreme case, obviously, but how do you feel reproductive health care needs to improve for women in the system?
I think that reproductive care in general could probably be more accessible to a lot of women in this country in general. And so it's just a reflection of that kind of neglect right. to women in our culture.
Right.
Women in the jail, I mean, sterilization is a crazy overlooked topic, I feel like, and has been happening way more recently than people would like to ever admit to. And I think now there's a lot more legal red tape that prevents that, mm-hmm. and I think that when a lot of people go to jail, they have a lot less rights, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. That should not be one that is neglected, but right. I've never heard of that happening, you know, where I worked, but
right.
I wouldn't doubt that it did happen.
Right. As a woman in healthcare, I mean, working at the jail system, I mean, I know you touched on that it's not as crazy, or you don't feel as, you know, unsafe as one would think, but have you experienced any, you know, disparities with, you know, colleagues or any male oppression in the jail system?
Towards me personally or towards the prisoners?
Towards you personally.
Yeah, a little bit. I think that just regular old sexism type work. Nursing is women's work, right? So, like,
right.
So that's always interesting. Kind of like, you know, you're kind of seen as, like, maybe being overly emotional for the sake of the clientele. Mm-hmm. There was male nurses as well that I think have been taken more seriously. There's always going to be, like, sexually inappropriate comments. One thing I think is interesting is that they just started to institute... So PREA is a huge thing, which I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it's, like, a prison... Shit, I can't remember what it stands for, but it's like a Prison Rape Elimination Act. I think that's what it is, yeah, Prison Rape Elimination okay. Act. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so this is a huge deal right now in the country since rape is such a prevalent thing, especially in prisons. Oh, yeah. And mostly, interestingly enough, I think between men, male inmates, male to male. But, so now they're trying to institute this thing where every single time that you would enter like a module... which is like a housing unit of inmates, you're supposed to yell out your gender.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so this was supposed to prevent, it's supposed to help notify the opposite gender that, you know, someone of the opposite gender has just entered the module and that if you're naked or something that you need to cover up, right? Mm-hmm. So this is just like one of the mm-hmm. things that they're passing. Which we all thought that was crazy because on one hand, like, you have to imagine as a female nurse, like, going onto a male dorm is already kind of, like, insane because
right,
all
intense.
Eyes are on you.
Right,
all
right.
eyes are on you, and you're already knowing that they're yelling inappropriate things at you or they're probably thinking them. I've seen people jerking off in their cell.
Are you serious? Yeah. Oh my gosh.
And so for me to have to yell female on the dorm.
It's almost like inviting.
It's almost inviting. It did not feel safe for me to do that. And I really hated that. And I also think there's some root, you know, just things wrong with that. For instance, why does someone have to be a rapist only to the opposite gender? Why?
Right.
Since if the percentages are highest male to male rape, then why would that even help lower those percentages? And another interesting thing is transgender individuals.
Yes.
So, like, what are you supposed to yell to those individuals? Are you supposed to yell, you know, like, what qualifies as the opposite gender for that? I think there's a lot of gray area. Yeah, a lot of gray areas, lots of problems with it. And I don't think it's really helping.
Right.
I don't know. Right. But that was kind of like the hot topic before I left. But
right. Yeah. Well, and also, I mean, I know you've kind of mentioned before that you've had some people in the system actually stalk you. What can the jail system do to actually help prevent and protect its workers from cases like that happening.
I literally had people tell me, well, bring some mace with you. And that's about the extent of the protection that I could get at that point.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's kind of scary. And I learned a lot about what that means. And this is, I guess, where some of the sexism comes in, right? Because it's like, everyone's first question was, well, what did I do to get this person's attention? Like, what did I do?
Right.
To, like,
it's your fault.
Yeah. Somehow I must have attracted this attention. Yeah. Right.
You were wearing red lipstick. You have too much mascara on. Yeah.
Right. And so, literally, this is a client that I never talked to. I never even provided healthcare to them. They're not a sick individual. They never even needed healthcare. He literally saw me on the module at some point, found out what my name was, and was sending me, you know, medical requests that were inappropriate. I had filed those in, turned those in, and let everyone at my job know about that. And then when it came down to it, this individual showed up at my house when it was the most scary, right? Because now this person knows where I live and work. And when I go to try to defend myself on this, the police department, or I should say the deputies, those, I guess, it's, you know, it's different. The police are different from the county deputies. Anyway, they didn't know where any of those things even were, the letters that get sent. So for bringing it to the judge, I just had pretty much what I said.
It was like your word.
Yeah, it was my word. And the judge was cool about it and did grant it, but I will say that there are other coworkers that I've had that have social workers and other people in the jail that have gotten similar situations where stalkers have shown up and they are not granted stalking. Mm-hmm. Stalking mm-hmm. orders are pretty much the only way that you can get legal protection. And it's tricky because once a stalking order is in place, it's a very serious charge. So once a stalking order is in place, it can never go away, really. And it will always affect this person's, you know, rights.
Mm-hmm.
And it will make this person pretty angry, you know, because maybe now they really do want to attack you because now you've taken, like, a hit against them. Whereas before, maybe you didn't. But it's, like, it's real iffy. Mm-hmm. Another thing I really don't like about it is I have to go face this person that I've never even met, and it's like, that's part of the...
They make you get in front of this person.
Yeah.
And tell them what you're charging them for.
And this is a guy who's highly delusional. He's got a lot of mental health issues. He, you know, believes in UFOs, and I didn't think it was anything of it until he showed up at my house
because
of how delusional the content of the letters were about him being a millionaire and, like, a rap star and, like, all these things.
Clearly off balance a little.
So I didn't think he would ever, you know, that it would ever get too serious. But then, you know, when he showed up at my house, then I was like, okay.
Okay.
I have to do something about it.
Yeah, definitely.
But it is really sad. I don't like to see people. I don't think he belongs in the jail system, you know?
Right.
But
you have to look out for yourself.
I have to look out for myself, and there's not really a system in place that takes care of people that need mental health. And also, he doesn't want that. He does not feel like he's mentally ill. He does believe he's a rap star.
Right.
And that I'm in love with him. You know, I mean,
yeah,
I hate to laugh about it, but it's kind of funny. I mean,
yeah, you have to look at the comedy in it all, I guess. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Do you have any parting words for anybody that's interested in going into healthcare?
I mean, I think that the jail system is a really great place to work for. I think prison advocacy is really important. I think it's really great to have people that care within that system. I think if you do want to be in that, being a nurse is a little bit better. It's a lot easier to work within there and to really advocate for people. But I think healthcare in general, I mean, it's interesting to me, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for talking with me today.
Thank you.
All right. This is Women Speak, and I'll talk to you soon.